This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Happy Monday. What a beautiful day here in Washington, D.C. And it's like in the high 50s, low 60s, something like that. It's sunny. It's marvelous. And in fact, here in Washington, D.C., about three blocks from where I'm sitting, tomorrow, the Supreme Court is going to hear arguments in the gay marriage case. And what's interesting about this is the whole history behind not just the gay marriage case, but these quote religious freedom bills. I would call them right to discriminate bills, right for businesses to discriminate based on presumably the religion of some of their stockholders or shareholders or management or whatever. And the origin of this whole thing, you know, where it all started, is really fascinating stuff. I mean, it's like, you know, it began. Well, in fact, we're going to get Kevin Cruz on the show. He wrote a book called One Nation Under God. And just some little pieces of this. Back in 1940, we were coming out of the Great Depression, and 5,000 industrialists were gathered together in New York City at the Waldorf Astoria, which is still a nice hotel, but at that time it was the nice hotel in New York City. And they had, you know, the CEOs speaking from General Motors, General Electric, Standard Oil, Mutual Life, Sears Roebuck, even J. Edgar Hoover spoke, the FBI director. And it ended pretty much this meeting with a speech by a fellow that nobody had heard of then, and probably most people haven't heard of now. His name was James W. Fifield Jr. And it's and I just put two and two together because I saw a friend of mine over the weekend who said, you know, do you know about James Fifield? And I'm like, no, but I had read the name before, but I didn't recognize it. He got up and he gave a speech, and he said, as a minister, as a Christian minister, 1940, he said that the New Deal was an encroachment. This is FDR's New Deal, right? Got us out of the Great Depression, brought us Social Security and unions and all that kind of stuff. He said it was an encroachment on our American freedoms. He said there's a multitude of federal agencies attached to the executive branch that represent the menace of autocracy approaching through bureaucracy. In other words, our government was going to, because of our regulatory agencies, and this was even before the EPA and half the regulatory agencies we have now, through our regulatory agencies, our government was becoming oppressive. Well, to whom? To business. It's not oppressive to you or me, but, you know, I mean, I don't have to fill out forms with the EPA, but if I was refining oil, or burning oil for that matter, I might have to. And as Cruz writes, Kevin Cruz writes in his book, he says, Fifield's audience of executives is stunned. He said these titans of industry had been basically taking on the story since 1928. Keep in mind, this was, you know, most of these people saw the Great Crash, lived through the Great Depression. This is now just a decade later. And they had been taking the blame for it, right? I mean, America was blaming the big businesses and the Republicans for the Great Depression. And rightfully so, by the way, because they caused the Great Depression, just like they caused the crash in 2008, just like they're going to cause the next crash, what I call the crash of 2016. So what did Fifield said? He said, you got to get religion. Start using religion to essentially manipulate the masses. It's almost like he read Das Kapital, you know, Karl Marx's Religion is the Opiate of the Masses. And he was like, yeah, let's start throwing some opium at these people. To quote Cruz's book, he said, Fifield told the industrialists that clergymen would be crucial in regaining the upper hand in their war with Roosevelt. Now, this is mind-boggling to me because, you know, Christianity is so explicit that to be a Christian, and of course it's not unique to Christianity. It's you know, these same sentiments are found in Islam and Judaism and in the non-monotheistic religions and Buddhism and Hinduism and all, yeah. I mean, all of these are just core human principles that you know, humility and you know, the people who seek riches are getting stuck and, you know, blah, 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 blah. Anyhow, he says, so Fifield told the industrialists that clergymen would be crucial in regaining the upper hand in their war with Roosevelt. As men of God, ministers could voice the same conservative complaints as business leaders, but without the suspicion that they were motivated by self-interest. They could push back against claims made by Roosevelt that business had somehow sinned and the welfare state was doing God's work. And Cruz writes, this was a watershed moment. This was new blend of conservative religion, conservative economics, conservative politics. One observer aptly anointed it Christian libertarianism. And this led to the rise of Billy Graham and all these things. You know, the head of the Federal Council of Churches had said of the New Deal that it embodied Christian principles, right? Originally, the churches in America were all gung-ho, or most of the churches in America were all gung-ho in favor of Franklin Roosevelt. The president of the Federal Council of Churches said that the New Deal embodies Christian principles such as, quote, the significance of daily bread, shelter, and security. So here you've got, you know, religious leaders in the United States supporting the New Deal. And so business leaders said, you know, it can't be us against the churches. So we've got to invent our own churches, basically. A neo-Calvinism. A new religious doctrine. And so Reverend Fifield took over the First Congregational Church in Los Angeles in 1935. He was nicknamed the Apostle to Millionaires. This was a church that, you know, many of the very wealthy people in Hollywood went to. And notably, Cruz writes in his book, Fifield dismissed the many passages in the New Testament about wealth and poverty and instead assured the elite that their worldly success was a sign of God's blessings. Right? Where have we heard this before? And he founded a group called Spiritual Mobilization, whose mission was, quote, to arouse the ministers of all denominations in America to check the trend toward pagan statism, which would destroy our basic freedom and spiritual ideals. He said, God imbued us with inalienable rights, which included enterprise and property. God wants you to be rich. God wants you to be a business person. And churches, he said, have the solemn duty to defend those rights against the encroachments of the state. So now we've got a fundamentalist Christian effort by business to take over to take over religion in America and influence the American people. You know, I keep telling you that the Republican Party, and this was business leaders, these were Republicans by and large, although back then there were probably more pro-corporate Democrats a few anyway. Actually, in the 1940s, most all Democrats were just gung-ho for FDR. But I've said so often that there in the Republican Party, there are the billionaires, there are the paid shills for the billionaires, and there are the suckers. And so it was a brilliant strategy by the National Association of Manufacturers to turn Christian ministers into paid shills for the billionaires to bring in more suckers. Some people think that if they're voting Republican, they're doing it because that's what Christ would want them to do. Yeah, I would argue not so much. I definitely don't think that's what Christ wants you to do. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
15 minutes past the hour. So, what would Jesus do or say, or any of these prophets, if they came back today? Welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you. And Richard in Leominster, Massachusetts watching on free speech. Hey, Richard, what's up?
Yeah, I'm a member of the Seventh-day Adventist.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the black guy that's running for president, he's a member.
Are you talking about the surgeon? What's his name? Ben Carson?
Yeah, Ben Carson, yeah. And we believe that the Catholic Church is the Antichrist. Everything they do is against what God says. You know, like, for instance, baptizing. You're supposed to be dunked underwater. They just pour a little water on your head.
Right.
They baptize babies, and Jesus said, wait, you know, you got to make that decision when you get older.
Yeah.
Everything they do, they have priests forgive you of your sins. Only God, Jesus can do
that. Why does that make them the Antichrist? Why doesn't it just make them, you know, a group of Christians who disagree with you on a bunch of the details of what it means to be a Christian?
I don't know. All I know is we sell a whole tape on it. It tells you the whole thing in Revelation and in Daniel. The Bible tells it right out loud, the bride and the beast, Babylon, everything.
Yeah.
Explained it like the Catholic Church persecuted 50 million people.
Oh, the Catholic Church killed, you know, I mean, if you want to do the entire history of the Catholic Church, it's been pretty bloody. But, you know, not so much today. We've got a pretty decent pope.
But why they're Antichrist.
Pardon?
The reason why they're Antichrist, like Vatican City, that stone statue, that's got all pagan gods on it. All through the church are pagan gods.
Yeah.
They tried to please the pagans and the Christians.
Well, you know, a lot of Christianity is pagan iconography. I mean, you know, the Christmas tree is pagan, the Yule log is pagan, the Easter bunny is pagan, the Easter eggs are pagan. I know Seventh-day Adventists who use all of those things. Does that mean Seventh-day Adventists are antichrists too?
Well, I don't use the Christmas tree and stuff, so I don't know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's probably true.
And similarly, I mean, you know, one of the things that Jesus was very, very emphatic about, it's right there in the Sermon on the Mount, is that you should never pray in public. And I've been to Seventh-day Adventist services where everybody stands up and prays, you know. I think you could say that probably of any Christian church. And it's always creeped me out ever since I read the Sermon on the Mount when I was young. You know, and Jesus just comes right out and says, do not pray out loud. You know, God will not hear. You will not be answered. I mean, just it's not only a waste of time. It's something you shouldn't do. And all of these churches are running around going, hey, it's time for prayer. Let's all say a prayer. Let's all put a, you know, and now we're turning this into, I mean, we got their National Day of Prayer. They do prayers before football games. And I mean, it's crazy. It's anti-Christian, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, we don't pray. I don't pray in public. I pray like if I go to someone's house and they, you know, not ask them to go to the church, and we talk to them, we'll pray with them.
Yeah. Well, there's a problem. Richard, thanks for the call. I have a lot of respect for the Seventh-day Adventists, although I'm not one. They are vegetarian. They keep the Sabbath on Saturday. They don't drink alcohol. I don't think they take stimulants either. It's sort of like the Mormons in that regard. But every Seventh-day Adventist I've ever known has just been a great person. Anyhow, we'll be back. It's 20 minutes past the hour. Okay, Summit, just, you know, this is a little bit off topic on this, but I have to share this with you. It's brilliant. This is, I'm not sure where this graphic came from. Smugmug.com, Schuller Photography. Anyhow, it's just a black and white graphic that's floating around the internet. I saw it on Democratic Underground. Question, did you hear about the black man killed by police this month? Walter Scott, shot 8 times in the back in Charleston? No, the other one. Oh, you mean 17-year-old Justice Howell, who was shot twice in the back outside Chicago 3 hours after Walter Scott was murdered? No, the other one. Oh, you mean Philip White, New Jersey, whose face was chewed off by a canine dog and bled to death while officers tried to seize video evidence from witnesses? No, the other one. Oh, Eric Harris from Tulsa, who was screaming, oh, my God, I'm losing my breath after being shot in the back To which your commanding officer responded, F your breath. No, no, the other one. Freddie Gray from Baltimore, you mean, who despite committing no crime was taken into custody and savagely beaten by police until they severed his spine in three places and collapsed his voice box only to die in agony 7 days later? No, no, the other one. I mean, how long does this have to go on? This back to Christianity and government. This is, first of all, I want to get into, you know, how the founders viewed this. And, you know, what we the people meant. Thomas Jefferson wrote in his personal diary entry for February 1st, 1799, quote, when the clergy addressed General Washington on his departure from the government, it was observed in their consultation that he had never on any occasion said a word to the public which showed a belief in the Christian religion. Really? George Washington never said he was a Christian? And they thought they should so pen their address as to force him at length to declare publicly whether or not he was a Christian. They did so. That is, they tried to force him to do this. However, Jefferson wrote in his diary, the old fox was too cunning for them. He answered every article of their address, particularly except that, whether or not he was a Christian, which he passed over without notice. He went on to say, Washington never did say a word on the subject in any of his public papers, except in the valedictory letter to the governor of the states when he resigned his commission in the army, wherein he speaks of the benign influence of the Christian religion. He says, I know that Governor Morris, who pretended to be in his secrets, in other words, a confidant of Washington, believed himself to, has often told me that General Washington believed no more of that fundamentalist Christian system than did he himself. The Treaty of Tripoli, one of our first treaties, one of our first trade agreements, right? The Treaty of Tripoli, 1797, it opens, the opening words, as the government of the, this was, by the way, written during the George Washington administration, presumably by his Secretary of State, who would have been Thomas Jefferson, but I'm not sure who wrote it. But in any case, it was worked out during the Washington administration, and then it was signed as a treaty. It was ratified by the Senate and signed as a treaty by John Adams, the second president, when Thomas Jefferson was vice president. And it says, quote, as the government of the United States is not in any sense founded on the Christian religion, and as it has in itself no character of enmity, you know, hatred, anger, whatever, against the laws, religion, or tranquility of Muslims, and as the said states never have entered into any war or act of hostility against any Mohammedan nation, Muslim nation, it is declared by the parties that no pretext arising from religious opinions shall ever produce an interruption of the harmony existing between the two countries. Right? We're not a Christian nation. Signed by John Adams, passed by the Senate. February 21st, 1811, James Madison, his first veto, vetoing money to go to a church. He said in his veto message, because the bill vests in said incorporated church and also authority to provide for the support of the poor and the educated of poor children at the same, it would be a precedent for giving to religious societies as such. And that, of course, he thought was a dangerous thing. Government should not be giving money to churches. So then, you know, the question was America based on Christianity, right? This is hysterical. February 10th, 1814, Thomas Jefferson, letter to Dr. Thomas Cooper. Finally, in answer to Fortescue Allon's question why the Ten Commandments should not now be part of the common law of England, we may say they are not because they never were. Christianity was not introduced until the 7th century. The conversion of the first Christian king of the Heptarchy having taken place in the year 598 and that of the last in 686. Here then was a space of 200 years during which the common law of England was in existence and Christianity was no part of it. We might as well say that the Newtonian system of philosophy is a part of the common law as that the Christian religion is. In truth, the alliance between church and state in England has made their judges accomplices in the frauds of the clergy and even bolder than they are. On June 5th, 1824, in a letter to Major John Cartwright, he writes, our revolution commenced on more favorable ground than the foundation of English or biblical law. It presented us an album on which we were free to write what we pleased. We had no occasion to search into musty records, to hunt up royal parchment, or to investigate the laws and institutions of a semi-barbarous ancestry. We appealed to those of nature and found them engraved in our hearts. So anyhow, it goes, you know, Jefferson Christian goes on and on about this. You know, this is a fraud, the idea that America is a Christian nation. But I got to tell you what this Christian business owner in Indiana is proclaiming. It's fascinating.
Unequal protection. How corporations hijacked our nation. Somebody today will get a free copy when they call into the show.
So, a question. How do we push back against this meme that America is a Christian nation? I mean, the National Association of Manufacturers done a really good job. Welcome back, Tom. I'm here with you. This is, you know, this whole idea of using Christianity to bring in the suckers to vote for Republicans who will then promote pro-business policies. And in the process of promoting those pro-business policies will make the businessmen and women more money, who will then in turn kick some of that money back to the Christian leaders, you know, the Billy Grahams of the world. A Billy Graham has passed on, but the Franklin Grahams of the world, the, you know, it used to be the Jerry Falwell, now it's the Ralph Reeds of the world, so that those folks can help promote business. And so anyhow, I mentioned this Christian business owner in Indiana. This was first posted, Sunday, March 29th. What was that? Yesterday? No, this is April. Yeah, this is about a month ago on Democratic Underground. And he said he's putting this a letter to his patrons, right? This I'm a Christian business owner in Indiana. It's posted by Stop Hurting America. And he says, I will no longer be doing business due to my sincerely held religious beliefs. And in light of the RFRA, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, recently signed by our dear leader Pence, I will no longer be doing business with the following persons, nor even permitting them in my establishment. Number one, divorcees. Jesus said, Matthew 19, and I say unto you, whoever divorces his wife except for unchastity and marries another commits adultery. Okay? No divorcees in this place of business. Number two, anyone who's ever read their horoscope or called a psychic hotline. Leviticus 26 says, for any person who turns to mediums and to spiritists to play the harlot after them, I will also set my face against that person and will cut him off from among his people. Number three, I will not serve anyone with a tattoo. Leviticus 19:28. You shall not make any cuts on your body for the dead, nor make any tattoo marks on yourselves. I am the Lord. Anyone born illegitimately is not welcome in our place of business. Right? Also, anyone who back to 10 generations is descended from someone born illegitimately. If you cannot prove using appropriate church sources that 10 generations of your family were born in wedlock, I'll have to err on the side of caution and not serve you. Deuteronomy 23:2 says, no one of illegitimate birth shall enter the assembly of the Lord. None of his descendants, even to the 10th generation, shall enter the assembly of the Lord. Any woman with braided hair or gold jewelry, 1 Timothy 2:9. This is Luke. Likewise, I want women to adorn themselves with proper clothing, modestly and discreetly, not with braided hair and gold or pearls or costly garments. Uh-oh. Any man who has ever, by accident or not, had his genitals damaged. Yikes. Does this include vasectomies? I don't know. So here's Deuteronomy 23:1. A man whose testicles are crushed or whose penis is cut off may never join the assembly of the Lord. And then he says, number eight, please don't bring your kids into my place of business if they have a bowl cut. Leviticus 19:27 reads, you shall not round out off the side growth of your heads nor harm the edges of your beard. Right. So in the midst of this, you have Ted Cruz talking, and so this is Ted Cruz, Tony Perkins, these guys, this is all basically how these funny Christians were funded by and essentially created by big business in America. And here's what Ted Cruz has to say, you know, again, speaking on behalf of the, quote, Christian business people, the billionaire Christians, this is what Ted Cruz has to say about liberal Democrats.
The modern Democratic Party has gotten so extreme, so intolerant, there is a liberal fascism that is dedicated to going after and targeting believing Christians.
Right. So what is a believing Christian, and who are these fascists that are going after them, and what's the technology, the technique of this liberal fascism? Now, I can't speak for all liberals, but I can speak for myself. The founders wanted this country to be secular. That was that was part of the radical new idea of America, was that most governments prior to the United States, if they weren't overtly religious, they used religion to justify their existence. The king or queen of England was, you know, ruled by divine right, right? The divine right of kings. And these guys want to bring that back? I think that's extremely unhealthy. Anyhow, John in South Bend, Indiana. Hey, John, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for maintaining my faith in humanity. But I grew up, I went to Catholic school in Detroit in the 1960s. And everything, and I went to Mass every morning and on Sundays. And everything I've learned from my Catholic upbringing was that these right-wingers are the exact opposite of what Jesus Christ was preaching. I mean, you know, Jesus wouldn't have been an NRA member. He wouldn't have been for all the Wall Street and corporate greed, the homelessness, the hunger, the hate and lie talk shows, racism, the warmongering. And yeah, they even dislike Pope Francis, who is probably one of the most popular popes we've had in centuries.
Because he's a socialist.
And I think if Christ were alive today, they'd crucify him all over again.
I think so, too. I really do. And you know, how dare you be anti-war, for example? This is neo-Calvinism is what it is. John, thank you for the call. Well said. Bill in Rockford, Illinois. Hey, Bill.
Tom, I enjoy your show.
Thanks.
I'm looking at the neo-Calvinism that you were talking about earlier, and I missed the person you were talking about. Is this written in your book someplace?
No, there's a new book.
A little bit more?
There's a new book out called One Nation Under God by Kevin Cruz, and he's gone back, and he actually did the digging and found all the notes and the meetings and the transcripts from the conferences that were held in the early 40s in the United States, when big business got together and said, okay, we've got to come up with a religious justification for our existence because people think that we're just selfish SOBs. So it's from Kevin Cruz.
All right.
And one chapter of it was reprinted as an article in Alternet back on April 21st with the title, How Corporate America Invented Christian America. One reverend's big business-backed crusade altered the political landscape. So you can check it out. Bill, thanks for the call. Thor in Berry Creek, California. Hello. Hey, Thor, what's up?
Hey, thanks for having me on your show. Hey, I was listening to you talk. I would like to share with you, I have a strong background in Christianity, but the reason I left the Christian church was because pretty much what you're talking about is the teachings that go against what I feel Christ taught. So now I'm a Wiccan priest. I've been a high Wiccan priest for a long time. Mm-hmm. I understand the idea around looking at Catholics and all of them like they are the Antichrist or will be. The problem is what they're teaching goes against Christ's teachings to prepare for all of that stuff that could come.
Yeah, and this really has nothing to do with Catholicism per se. There are
not particularly.
You know, in fact, the Catholic Church has been very progressive in some areas, you know, social justice,
right,
things like that.
Right. So, but I believe that all of this is leading up to that, leading up to empowering that concept of that Antichrist coming back and the destruction and all of that.
Huh.
I mean, I have personally, I've seen what I believe to be the Antichrist, and that's a long story. But I believe that the teachings and the directions that the churches have gone so far away from the Christian church to prepare for us to believe in him.
Yeah. Yeah, well, this new theology that business is somehow Christian, that a business like Hobby Lobby is Christian. I'm sorry, it's a business. You know, what did Jesus say to the rich guy? Sell everything you own and give it to the poor. Then you can follow me. Thor, thanks for the call. Russell in Hendersonville, North Carolina. Hey, Russell.
Hey, Tom. I'm in North Carolina, and it's kind of a hotbed of Christianity, and you name it, and it's kind of driving me crazy. I come from California. But I'm personally just so tired of anybody saying anything when it has to do with the public sphere about religion. I mean, even you, I mean, I appreciate everything you do, but when we talk about these issues crouched in any kind of, well, Jesus said this, or religion said that, or, you know, it shouldn't be there at all.
No, I agree. Oh. And my point in saying the things that I'm saying, I'm trying to push back against these right wingers who are basically reinventing Jesus as a feel good self help, I'll make you rich kind of guy. I mean,
right. I understand that, and I, like I said, I appreciate the way you do it, but you know, it happens here all the time when I'm talking to different people in North Carolina. They actually, you know, their proof is the Bible. But, you know, anytime you try to talk to them rationally about any sort of subject that has to do with public policy or even just my views on the world, you know, it's, oh, well, but the truth is the Bible. And I go, well, no, the Bible has nothing to do with this. The Bible is your belief and your belief alone, and it doesn't have anything to do with me, you know.
Right.
No, but it's the truth. I go, well, to you. And it's just,
right.
It's just crazy because we're basing public policy on a system that believes in magic. And, you know, if you're any kind of scientist at all, there's physics, there's things that are immutable in our universe, and magic is not one of them. There is no magic unless it's some sort of physics, you know?
By and large, yeah, I agree. Russell, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for listening to 880 AM there in Hendersonville, North Carolina. We'll be right back. It's 1:45, 15 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Back with more of your calls, my thoughts, and the news of the day right after this. Welcome back, 15 minutes before the hour. And Polly in Riverside, California. Hey, Polly, what's on your mind today? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Hi. My pleasure. Anyway, I had a few agreements and a couple of disagreements, so I'll say them real fast. First of all, when you say God says to go and destroy a certain group and it doesn't sound, you know, nice or something like that, it's because he knows back then the ones who were the fallen ones, like the ogres and, you know, the race that came out of the, you know, so-called fallen angel seed, and that's why, because they'll never be good, they'll always they came from a bad root. And why did God sound so bad in the Old Testament and sound so good in the New Testament? In the Old Testament, they were under the so-called curse when Adam and Eve, and they had to abide by the law, and God had to go along with that. And when Jesus came, they those under Jesus are out of the curse.
Right.
And anyway, I just wanted to say that there is a whole section on the Internet, U.S. History Quotes About God in the Bible, about George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, Andrew Jackson, the founders, with religious quotes, if you wanted to ever go there.
Many of those quotes are made up. David Barton is famous for this. B, politicians have been using religion, like at the correspondence dinner last night or night before last, whenever it was, Barack Obama said, you know, God bless America, you know, God bless you all. I mean, even Jefferson on occasion had said things like that, but Jefferson considered himself a deist, not a Christian. There were Christians among the founders. Probably the most outspoken was the largest slaveholder in Virginia, Patrick Henry, who famously said, give me liberty or give me death. But he was also a fanatic, a fundamentalist Protestant Christian. But even Patrick Henry strongly argued against the United States adopting a religion. Patrick Henry was totally in favor of the clause in the Constitution that says that there shall be no religious test, because he understood that if we established a religious test, or if we established a religion, or if we said that our country was founded on religion, his religion might be on the outs. You know, it's like, whose religion are you going to pick? Massachusetts had already done that. At the time of the founding of this republic, Massachusetts, or large chunks of Massachusetts, were operating functionally as a theocracy. The police went from house to house on Sunday morning. If you weren't in church, you could be arrested. You would be taken out, put in the stocks, and publicly humiliated. You had to pay a tax every month that went to support the churches in Massachusetts. And there was a big debate about whether to even admit Massachusetts into the Union as a result of this. And this was all the echo of the Puritans and the Pilgrims from 100 years earlier when they first arrived, you know, in Massachusetts. And there was just a, outside of the Massachusetts delegation to the Constitutional Convention, there was an absolute unanimity that we are creating a secular republic here that is an echo of the Enlightenment, not that we are creating a Christian nation or anything like that. So, but anyhow, thank you, Polly, for the call. 10 seconds, John. Hang on, I'll get back to you. But this is the astonishing thing. You will be able to find all over the internet quotes and things that say, oh yeah, America's a Christian nation. Here's George Washington saying it. Here's Thomas Jefferson saying it. Here's so-and-so, somebody else saying it. These dueling quotes becomes A, almost impossible. But B, the thing that you need to know is the reason those quotes are out there, the reason that this stuff is being pushed down our throats, it's sort of like, you know, the same reason that slave owners encouraged slaves to embrace Christianity so that they would be looking at the next life rather than complaining about this one. 10 minutes before the hour, welcome back. John in Minneapolis. Hey, John, what's up?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, you know, it just amazes me that the whole record of Western civilization is just fraught with, you know, the problems of church and state and the alignment of church and state and the kinds of things that happened as a result of that leading up to, you know, our own American Revolution and how you can refute that. I mean, there's libraries all over the world that, you know, have that record. And I mean, that's what I learned in school. I don't know what they learn in school today, but, you know, I don't see how, you know, it's astounding the arrogance of these people if they think they can just totally rewrite history.
Right. And now they're taking it a step further and they're saying not only that, but based on your religious belief, if you own a business, your business can discriminate against particular classes of people.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
really?
We are definitely a secular society, and as a very religious person, I really applaud that. I like being here rather than living in Tsarist Russia or Habsburg Austria. I mean, you know, look at what happened there and the result of what happened there and the corruption
in the name of Christianity.
The corruption of, revolutions, the blood that was spilled. Why is it that we have to revisit this history and relive it over and over again just because, you know, it's useful. It's useful to a group of businessmen that want to repackage Christianity into a material idea.
That's right. It's called prosperity theology. And this stuff is aggressively being packaged, and it has been since 1940, since this seminal meeting of the National Association of Manufacturers, when they got together and this Christian preacher got up and basically said, we need to bring, you guys need the ministers. You know, you want to capture the heart of America, you need to do it through the churches. And they started, and business started this outreach to the churches and essentially created right-wing Christianity, which is,
right,
by the way, in my opinion, a form of Christianity that is anti-Christian. That embraces wealth rather than poverty. That honors the rich rather than the poor. I mean, it's just this is.
And can I say one more thing about Calvinism? I think that it is a cultural idea that even, you know, exists in a secular sense and influences what we do and it influences policy. And I don't think it's a very good thing, actually, to tell you the truth.
I agree. You're talking about the notion that the way that you can tell who God blesses is who's rich or famous or whatever, because that's.
Yeah.
You know.
And I think it persists, you know, even in our secular way of looking at things, you know, that rather than, you know, looking at poverty as being an evil, you know, these people just aren't clever enough. They're not good enough. They're not strong enough. You know, that kind of thinking, I think, persists. And I think it really distorts who we really are as human beings.
Yeah, agreed, agreed. John, thank you for the call. Well said. Odell in Buffalo, New York. Hey, Odell, what's up?
Okay, Tom, thank you very much. Okay, let me explain the 6 days.
The six days?
Day is a thousand.
You're talking about the 6 days of creation?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Okay, here we go. The first, oh, God said there was nothing here. Just space, darkness, nothing. First day he created, that's 1,000 years. Each day is 1,000 years. And the sixth day, he finished with man, created man at 6,000 years.
Right.
At another 7,000 years, which is where we at, that's 13,000. I'll be generous and say 14,000. Now, I want
to... wait a second. Odell, you're telling me the world is 14,000 years old?
Yes, sir. The Bible says so.
Okay.
Yes, sir. Okay, wait. Okay, hold on now. Inception. Adam was created without a man or a woman. Okay. Eve was created from Adam without a man or a woman conception. Now, there... God was not done.
Odell, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to stop this because I can't debate with you your perception of religion. That wasn't the point that I was making, and two people trying to argue my belief versus your belief. These are, you know, I mean, if you want to talk science, that's fine, but I'm going to move along. Thanks a lot for the call, though. Robert in Bullhead City, Arizona. Hey, Robert, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I really appreciate your show about Christianity and business and everything. I got to agree with you. I was a pastor, a minister. Well, I still am to a degree. However, I don't use the Holy Bible as my reference simply because the Holy Bible has been revised and revised throughout time. And I don't know if anybody has gotten that thing right yet.
Have you read the five Gospels by Funk?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So that's a pretty good effort to get it right. But again, we're discussing Christianity. I'm concerned about the fact that these fundamentalist Christians have been since 1940. That's what, 75 years now. Have been funded and promoted by big business in America. Robert, thank you a lot for the call. John in Portland. Hey, John, thanks for listening to X-Ray. What's up?
Thanks, Tom.
Got 1 minute, by the way, John.
Hang on just a second, Tom.
John?
Yes, I'm sorry. My points are we are a government set up by people who were sick and tired of all this ancient stuff, religion, superstition,
right,
for the most part, I think. And we can practice any religion we want in the U.S. And let's go back to the First Amendment. I love our First Amendment. Religious establishment prohibited freedom of speech or press, right to assemble and petition. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting free exercise thereof.
Right.
Or abridging the freedom of speech or the press or the right of the people peacefully to assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances.
Right.
And
we're ignoring many pieces of that. But you're saying we either love the Constitution or not? Is that, you think they're...
Love it or leave it, Tom. Remember what they used to tell us in the 60s?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, toss it back at them. John, thanks a lot for the call. Thanks for listening to X-Ray FM. We'll be right back. Well, right after the news at the top of the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com. Your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. And on the line with us is Demetrius Miner. Demetrius is a former talk show host, a member of Project 21, author of the new book, Preservation and Purpose, How I Became a Conservative and How Millennials Can Save America. Demetrius, welcome to the program.
Hello, Tom. Glad to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So, you know, reading your book, I get the sense, I mean, a lot of your book is devoted to your personal Christian faith. But I get the sense that you believe that somehow that should be applied to our country. Are you a theocrat? Do you believe that the United States should be a theocracy? We should be run by God and God's laws?
No, of course I don't believe that the United States is a theocracy, but I am a man of faith. I am a man of spiritual principle, and I live my life or attempt to live my life according to Scripture, but, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that I shove my opinions and my beliefs down the throat of other people, but I do not mind sharing with people about my faith and about my upbringing.
Well, here's the thing that baffles me, because you through your book you talk about being a conservative and then also being a Christian. And Jesus was really clear about what it means to be a Christian. I mean, as I'm sure you know, in Matthew 25, he was asked, what do we have to do to get to heaven, to be with you? And he said, you know, when I was hungry, you fed me. When I was thirsty, you gave me water. When I was in prison, you visited me. When I was naked, you clothed me. The modern day version of that would be homeless and you housed me. And when I was sick, you healed me. And by the way, he prefaces all that by saying, in the last days, the nations will be assembled before me and I will be judging them. Not individuals, but nations. And I would say that liberals have held to that, been in creating Social Security, Medicare, the Peace Corps, unemployment insurance, civil rights, student programs, you know, free education, safety laws, and which save people's lives, environmental laws, prevailing wage laws, collective bargaining, the Marshall Plan, the school lunch program. I mean, I can go on and on. Fair Labor Standards Act. All of these things were supported by Democrats and progressives, and all of them, every single one of the things I just mentioned, which are absolutely consistent with the teachings of Jesus, were opposed by conservatives. How can you be a conservative and a Christian at the same time? A serious question.
Well, Tom, allow me to say this. When it comes to the teachings of Christ, and when it comes to the principle of trying to make it to heaven, you know, God definitely doesn't come at it from a liberal conservative perspective. I think it would be foolish for mankind to attempt to label God as a liberal or conservative or a Democrat or a Republican.
Scripture. Why would it be foolish? I think Jesus was the original liberal.
Well, you're more than welcome to think.
I'm serious. No, Demetrius, you know this. You know, conservatives have said no to expanding health care for people. You know, Harvard University estimates that, you know, 14,000 people are going to die in the United States this year just in the red states that are refusing to expand Medicaid. So they say, no, we're not going to heal you, which was something Jesus said you got to do. No, we're not going to feed you. They want to cut back on food stamps and support for you know, hungry people. At a time that childhood poverty is higher in the United States than in any other developed nation in the world, and higher than it's been in the United States since 1929. They say no to housing support. Again, Jesus, you know, it's every single thing that I just mentioned from Matthew 25, which are this is what it means to be a Christian, according to Jesus, conservatives oppose. I don't understand how it's possible to be a conservative and be a Christian. I genuinely don't understand that. That's not a political slap.
Well,
it's a genuine question.
Tom, if you're going to talk about Scripture, you know, the Bible says, study to show yourself approved, and it talks about rightly dividing the Word of God or understanding the Word of God's context. It's not plausible to just take one passage of Scripture and to say that that's the epitome of Christianity. You're right. Jesus did tell us to do that. Jesus also told us to work. It's he that, you know, he talks about not being lazy, providing for your own health.
Where? What's the quote?
That is actually in the book of Proverbs.
Well, so, that's not Jesus. Proverbs is written 1,000 years before Jesus was even born.
Well,
I mean, you can have the Old Testament or you can have the New Testament, but you can't basically have both, because in the Old Testament, you know, it's like if somebody's divorced, they're well, actually, that's in the New Testament. Jesus said that if you're divorced, you're an adulterer. And so should, you know, you're speaking in favor of these Religious Freedom Restoration Act kind of laws, I understand. And if that's the case, then do we really want businesses saying, no, we don't serve divorced people?
Well, the whole premise of the book is not to isolate liberals or to tell people that if you're only Christian if you're conservative, or you're only Christian if you're liberal or progressive. The Bible says his ways are not our ways, his thoughts are not our thoughts. So it's completely foolish for a natural person to equate the supernatural to modern-day political ideology. The purpose of the book was to appeal to young millennials, to appeal to young adults, and to encourage them to get involved in the political process.
No, I understand that. And I, you know, as I said, I've read much of your book. But you tweeted out a couple of days ago, Jesus loves Bruce Jenner. There's absolutely nothing that he has or is facing that Christ can't deliver him from, as if Bruce Jenner going through this transition to becoming a woman is sinful. I don't recall Jesus ever speaking about anything like that. Was it Jesus or Paul who said, you know, some men are born eunuchs, some are made eunuchs, some choose to be eunuchs? You know, you can interpret that in a variety of ways. But this is you know, in 1940, the National Association of Manufacturers got together and decided to start funding a new form of evangelical Christianity that was business friendly. And they threw all this money into this. It led to Billy Graham. They made him famous. It led to the prayer breakfasts. It led to putting on our coins in God We Trust. It led to, in 1956, inserting One Nation Under God into our Pledge of Allegiance. All this stuff was funded by big business. You know, my take is that in the Republican Party, in the conservative movement, there's basically three kinds of people. There are the very, very rich, which is what it's all about. There are the paid shills for the very, very rich, and some of them are paid very well. And then there's the suckers that the shills bring along. And what the National Association of Manufacturers did in 1940 was said, okay, new group of suckers, Christians, let's bring them in and make them pro-business. And they've been doing that very successfully. But it's not what Jesus would have done.
Well, you know, not all of us can be as dead broke as the Clintons.
I'm serious about this. You want to read the whole documentation? There's a new book out by Kevin Cruz called One Nation Under God, in which he documents how, to this day, big business, large corporations are bankrolling the religious right to cause people to think that they should vote Republican. And the Republicans don't give a rat's ass about, you know, Jesus or Christianity. What they're all about is making money for their buddies.
Well, Tom, I think you're smart enough to know that corruptness has been on definitely both sides of the aisle.
The what?
One party is not more pure than the other.
I disagree. I absolutely disagree. The Republicans are aggressively trying to prevent people from getting health care in the United States. I consider that sinful. The Democrats are in favor of health care for everybody in the United States. The Republicans are trying to privatize Social Security. They want to go back. You know, I mean, one of the leading causes of death among elderly people prior to 1935 was freezing to death in the winter. Republicans want to
You are aware that President Bill Clinton, who's a hero in the modern-day Democratic Party, proposed privatizing Social Security.
I don't know if he did or he didn't, but if he did, it was stupid.
He did. He proposed it in the 1998 State of the Union address. Putting Social Security into a private sector.
I would be astonished if that were the fact. But whether that's true or not, you know, I'm not here to defend Bill Clinton. I'm just saying, well, anyhow, we're out of time.
It's been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, Demetrius Minor is the author. The Preservation and Purpose, The Making of a Young Millennial is the title. Demetrius, thanks for dropping by. Oh, and the website is demetriusspeaks.com. DemetriusSpeaks.com. Thank you, Demetrius. Oh, he's gone. He just hung up. Okay.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back 15 minutes past the hour. 15 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Butch in Opportunity, Montana, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Network. Hey, Butch. Butch,
hi,
what's
up? Tom, how are you doing?
Just great. How are you?
I just have a short comment, I hope.
Okay.
Since the Bible forbids soothsayers, mystics, astrology, all that stuff.
Right.
Since Ronald Reagan was kind of big into astrology, does that mean that St. Reagan is in hell?
Could be. I mean, it was more his wife, but he refused to sign things and give speeches when his wife's astrologer said it's a bad day to do it, and he enthusiastically did things. But yeah, so good question. I mean, that would be a question to put to one of these fundy Christians. Is, you know, Reagan was following soothsayers. You know, should he be banned from the should he be no longer called a Christian president? That's an interesting one. Butch, thanks a lot for the call and the question. Chris in Las Vegas, Nevada. Hey, Chris, what's up?
What's going on, Tom? You know, I'd encourage a lot of, you know, people that maybe haven't been listening to you for as long as I have to go on YouTube and just listen to the, just type in like Tom Hartman, Brian Fisher, the naughty or nice list. You know, this is what the AFA comes out with every single year. It's a pretty hilarious interview because, you know, you're basically, you know, and, you know, Brian's not here to defend himself, but, you know, you thought that the AFA's position, you know, by using retailers and using Christianity to make a buck, was blasphemous.
Right.
And, you know, I would just encourage people to check that interview out because you're on fire, man.
Okay. Well, thank you. It's been a while. I don't remember the details of it, but I appreciate that. Say what? Oh, that's right. I was screaming repent at him. Yeah. Now I remember. Yeah. Thanks a lot for that call. Cliff, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV in Claremore, Oklahoma. Hey, Cliff, what's up?
Yeah, it's okay. You know, I'm having to deal with this on a regular basis here in Oklahoma, but I also have to say, too, that I have a cousin who lives over in Collinsville, Oklahoma, and she was watching the Country Music Awards, and they had the military up on stage, and it's kind of interesting how not only do they, Republicans on the right-wing sector use the religion as props, but the military as a political prop as well. And what's interesting, too, is I'm looking at a thing on the website, General Smedley Butler, who basically said in a speech that he gave in 1933 that war is a racket, and he even knew that even when he first got in.
Yeah, it's the title of his book, which you can still buy.
And absolutely. And this is not a, you know, bleeding heart hippie liberal that most the conservatives. So if a conservative is hearing this and wants to argue the point, then hey, I'm far from being anti-military. My dad was a Marine Corps veteran. He was in Vietnam. He passed away this time last year, and I will tell you this, I'd be the last person to be anti-military, but when I see that the military is being used as a political prop, it angers me. The way the right have been doing it is a very cynical move on their part, and I detest that.
Yeah, George Bush was the master of that. Remember flying out of the deck of the aircraft carrier?
Fought in battle just the same as people on the right.
Yeah. Yeah, amazing. Cliff, thank you very much for the call. I'm with you. 20 minutes past the hour. I'll be right back. Tom Hartman here with you. It's pretty astonishing, you know, really, when you think of what's going on with this stuff. It's just it is ahistoric. It's not, you know, it counters actual history of the United States. It is a-religious or anti-religious, in my opinion, to try to inflict religion on a country. Do we really need the Christian Taliban here? Do we want to become, you know, the Christian Republic of the United States? I don't. Speaking as somebody who calls himself a Christian, I don't want to see this become the Christian Republic of the United States. We are, you know, this country was created out of the Enlightenment. I mean, Jefferson was just so outspoken about how it doesn't, you know, it's not, in fact, he constantly referred to the frauds of the clergy. Let me just share a couple more quick quotes with you, and then get into some of your phone calls. I already shared that. This is one of my favorites. Thomas Jefferson was running for president of the United States. It's the summer of 1800. He's running against John Adams, the sitting president, and Jefferson at that point in time was the vice president, and he and Adams were not speaking. They hated each other at that point. And a friend of his, Benjamin Rush, he was a physician, and one of Jefferson's probably 10 closest friends in the world, who was also a deist and a Unitarian. He was not a Christian, Ben Rush. Sent him a letter and, asking Jefferson's thoughts on Christianity. Now, at the top of the Jefferson Memorial here in Washington, D.C., if you go into the Jefferson Memorial, there's this dome at the very top above this giant statue of Jefferson. And etched into the dome are the following words. I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man. That's what it says in the Jefferson Memorial. And fundamentalist Christians love to quote that. Jefferson using the word God, the altar of God. Let me provide you with the context for this, because that quote came out of that letter to Ben Rush. Let me read you the entire letter, or at least three paragraphs out of the letter. There's some other personal stuff in there that doesn't have to do with this topic. But he says, Dear Dr. Rush, I promised you a letter on Christianity, which I have not forgotten. I do not know that it would reconcile the genus Irritable Vatum, which is the genus, the kind of variety of Irritable Vatum, angry priests, who are all in arms against me. Their hostility is on too interesting a ground to be softened. The delusion, and now he's talking about the First Amendment, right, which guarantees freedom of religion in the United States. The delusion on the clause of the Constitution, which while it secured the freedom of the press, covered also the freedom of religion, has given to the clergy a very favorite hope of obtaining an establishment of a particular form of Christianity throughout the United States. And as every sect believes its own form the true one, everyone perhaps hoped for his own, but especially the Episcopalians and the Congregationalists. The returning good sense of our country, and by that he's speaking of his being elected president of the United States. Okay. This is in his letter to Ben Rush, by the way, he says, please do not let anybody read this letter. This was found in his papers after he died. The returning good sense of our country threatens abortion to their hopes. And the preachers believe that any portion of power confided to me, such as being elected president, will be exerted in opposition to their schemes. And they believe rightly, for I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man. You get it? He's talking about religion. He said, but this is all they have to fear for me, and enough, too, in their opinion. End of quote. So the very quote that has been put into the Jefferson Memorial and is constantly quoted by these Bible thumpers about Jefferson, no, throne of God, eternal hostility against any form of tyranny over the mind of man. Well, the tyranny over the mind of man that Jefferson was speaking of was Christianity. And he was being peppered by, lobbied by, harassed by the Unitarians and the Congregationalists and, you know, a whole bunch of other religious folks, basically wanting him to profess Christianity. He was not a Christian. He was a deist. And he went out of his way not only to not endorse Christianity, but basically to diss it on multiple occasions. And yet you've got these paid apologists for this new, muscular, business-friendly form of Christianity that was essentially invented in 1940 by the National Association of Manufacturers. And this one guy, this one pastor, who spoke at their conference and said, hey, you know, it's time for business to bring in the Christian church. And thus, within a generation, we had Billy Graham and Jerry Falwell and all, and Pat Robertson and all these guys, and they started building empires. And much of their empires were a consequence of money that they were getting from the government. This was Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush's 1,000 points of light. The Reagan campaign and the Bush senior campaign had as their liaison with the fundamentalist Christian community a young man by the name of George W. Bush. And they were funneling tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars, perhaps billions, but certainly hundreds of millions of dollars, directly to these right-wing churches, who then were engaging in political activity to support the Republicans. So we're back to my original theory that there's three groups of people in the Republican Party. There's the rich people, there's the shills for the rich people, and now they have turned so many of these preachers into the shills, and there's the suckers that the shills bring along. It's amazing. It's astonishing. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
So how do we push back against this other than simply pointing it out? That seems to me like the best strategy. Your thoughts after the break. Speaking of, you know, how a country should be run. Welcome back, by the way. A country. And why is it that the right is constantly going off on social entitlement programs? I mean, I understand, you know, on the right, you've got the billionaires, you've got the shills, the salespeople, and you've got the suckers. And the billionaires and the shills are constantly complaining about the social safety net in the United States. Paul Buchheit has a piece over Common Dreams right now that's really great. It's really worth reading. Our social safety net, this is SNAP, you know, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, WIC, Women, Infants, and Children, Child Nutrition, Earned Income Tax Credit, Supplemental Security Income, Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, Education, Training, and Housing. All of these programs in aggregate are about $370 billion a year. It sounds like a lot of money, right? $370 billion a year. Probably a third of that is our subsidies of Walmart and McDonald's and all these low-wage employers, because they, people are working and they still qualify for many of these programs. But nonetheless, it's $370 billion a year. Social Security is $863 billion, although you pay into Social Security and then you get your own money back out. So I'm not even sure that we should be talking about Social Security in this context. But that's it for the social safety net, by and large. It's in the neighborhood of $1 trillion. $1 trillion. How much do the top 20% of taxpayers in the United States make by avoiding taxes, by legal loopholes that allow them to avoid taxes? $2.2 trillion every year. More than twice, arguably, you know, more than, what would that be? Is it $370 billion is the entire social safety net minus Social Security, and $2.2 billion is tax avoidance in the United States. And so that's seven times. Thank you, Shane. You can do math faster than me. And investment gains, $5 trillion from 2008 to the middle of 2014, 6 years since the recession. For every $1 of safety net costs, $10 in new wealth went to the top 10% in the United States. And all conservatives and Republicans can talk about is, oh, my God, look at all this money we're spending on it. We got to start. You have welfare recipients. They got to pee in a cup. Food stamps. You got to pee in a cup. We're going to make it harder for, you know. You want Medicaid expanded so that, you know, working poor people can get healthy? Oh, no, forget that. That ain't going to happen. Die in the gutter. And then he says, here's the most extreme, 14 billionaires versus 46 million hungry Americans. America's 14 richest individuals, Paul Buchheit writes, made more from their investments last year than the $80 billion that we spent on people who need food. Basically, the food stamp budget and SNAP. This is the 14 richest individuals, and this was all investment income, which means none of it was taxed for income taxes. It's capital gains tax, which is, you know, a third of what, roughly, of what income taxes are. And many of them didn't even pay that because they've got, you know, a million ways to shelter their income. Buchheit writes, clearly, conservative sources don't tell us the full story. They dwell on the cost of the safety net, emphasizing its accumulating total over several years, while stubbornly ignoring the real problem. The super rich feel they deserve all the tax breaks. And, you know, that's true entitlement, right? You know, or an entitlement mentality. By the way, the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, the PCCC, Adam Green and buddies, pushing Elizabeth Warren. They've got now a picture of Adam Green and Elizabeth and Stephanie. Stephanie's last name, Stephanie Taylor. Holding a sign, 200,000 signatures for debt-free college. And here's what's amazing about this. This is a resolution calling for debt-free college in the United States. Not even a law, it's just a resolution just saying this is what we want to go to, like we used to have under Abraham Lincoln, like California had before Ronald Reagan, go to college for free debt, or at least debt-free. Here are the people who have signed on to this. None of them, by the way, are Republicans. Brian Schatz, Chuck Schumer, Elizabeth Warren, Jack Reed, Cory Booker, Chris Murphy, Raul Grijalva, Keith Ellison, Catherine Clark, Bobby Scott, Mark Pocan, Steve Israel, Hank Johnson, Barbara Lee, Ruben Galeo, Mark Tucano, Chris Van Hollen, Donna Edwards, John Connors, Eleanor Holmes Norton, Jim McDermott, Judy Chu, Peter DeFazio, Charlie Rangel, Janice Hahn, Alan Grayson, Bonnie Coleman, Jared Paulus, Mike Honda, Maxine Waters, Jim McGovern, Ted Lieu, Mark DeSaulnier, if I'm saying that right, California 11th District, Louis Gutierrez, Alma Adams, Peter Welch, Jan Schakowsky, Frederica Wilson, and Yvette Clark. If any of those names are people who represent you, you might want to call Congress and, you know, the Congressional Switchboard 202-225-3121 and say, thank you. Debt-free college. Yeah, great idea. That also seems sort of like a Christian thing to do, or a Jewish thing to do, or a Muslim thing to do, whatever. It's like that's the right thing to do. That's what people of faith should be doing, is creating a better future for our children. Lewis in Chicago. Hey, Lewis, what's on your mind?
Tom, you were talking about the influence of religion, and I think, to be a true, Christian, I mean, you're going to have problems with both sides of the spectrum. You know, the Bible says, don't turn to the left or to the right, and compares the Word of God to a double-edged sword. And, as a Catholic, I'm Catholic, I have problems with some of these wars going on, John Paul II was the loudest person to speak against the Iraq war. So, and as a Catholic, I oppose the wars, I oppose some of this money influence in politics. So, you would say I'm kind of a hybrid, and on the social issues, I'm opposed to things like abortion and same-sex marriage. So it's kind of like, a mixed bag. But I think if you're a true Christian, you're going to have problems with both the right and the left in this country. But yet, both the right and the left try to use Christianity to suit their own means.
Yeah, although I would say that the right has basically claimed ownership rights over Christianity. And I don't hear Democratic politicians, progressive politicians, if ever invoking any kind of religion. And frankly, it might be to their benefit to do it more often, although I think that they're all, that they all share James Madison's concern that if government starts giving money to religion and to churches, which we have been doing to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars a year now, ever since the Reagan administration, if we continue doing that, we are going to corrupt religion itself. And
I agree with you because, I think that, I don't like that. That's one reason I don't like voucher systems, because then the government can tell the schools what to say. I'm against this, contact between government and religion as far as the faith-based initiative, because then, the problem is not just religion intruding on government. Government's going to end up intruding on religion, and that's the history of Christianity.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this was the big debate between Madison and Jefferson. Jefferson even floated the idea once in one of their letters that people who were ordained should not be allowed to run for public office. He very quickly pulled back from that, but he was very afraid of religious people ending up running our country. And Madison was saying, oh, don't worry about that. They can be religious and be rational, his word was Republican, small r, they can adhere to Republican principles. In other words, the principles of a republic. But Madison was afraid that government would corrupt religion. And it turns out they were both right. It's like religion is corrupting government. Government is corrupting religion. It's terrible. Lewis, thank you for the call. Dan in Onalaska, Washington. Hey, Dan.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Great. 1947 movie?
Yeah. The War Department put out this educational film called Don't Be a Sucker. And it's it has to do, like the religion, how it took over, Nazi religion took over Germany.
I've seen it.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I saw that. Oh, it's been probably 4 or 5 years, but yeah, I've seen it. Yeah, it's the Don't Be a Sucker. And it's basically, you know, don't listen to the, to the Nazi.
I mean,
propaganda.
You know, it's kind of like what the GOPers are trying to do today, in my opinion.
Yeah. In fact, I should check that out on YouTube. It's been a while since I watched it, and I don't remember the exact details, but I remember it was pretty cool. Dan, thanks for the reminder on that and for the heads up. I appreciate it. We'll track it down, maybe play it on the air. Ed in Klamath Falls, Oregon. Hey, Ed, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Oh, Tom, I've heard you quote that Tripoli Treaty many times. I can't help but wonder if you could, like, walk into a federal court and say, well, we need to do away with all the prayers in Congress and the In God We Trust on the money and just reference the Treaty of Tripoli. It supersedes the Constitution. Treaties tend to do that.
Yeah. Well, treaties explicitly do that according to the Constitution. Treaties become the law of the land.
In addition, Republicans are always looking for a way to impeach Obama. I should think that when he bombed it out of a...
Oh, whoa. You can't talk like that on the radio, Ed. I'm, you know, we're going to delete that and... Okay, it's gone. All right. If that word slipped through, my apologies if you were offended by it. Alan, we have 1 minute till the break in Crown Point, Indiana. What's up, Alan?
Yeah, Tom, what do you think about Jefferson? If he didn't believe in a supreme being, why would he ask help from him in his second inaugural address?
Because it was basically what was required in the day, at that day. There was a religious revival happening in the early part of the 19th century. By 1805, it was really under steam. And, you know, it's just, I mean, Washington mentioned God once too. It wasn't because he was religious. It was because that's how you talked to people to inclusively bring everybody in. You know, Reagan did the same thing. He talked religion all the time. He never went to church, except ceremonially.
You keep quoting Jefferson. Why would he make that statement? That would be hypocritical.
Because he was a politician.
Yeah,
well, no, it wouldn't be hypocritical.
Other times you don't say he's politicians. Other times you make statements and he's not a political. Why would it be in this time?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'm not sure what you're talking about, Alan. What speech are you talking about? His second inaugural? What is it? Okay, I'll have to read it. So I'll check it out during the break. Alan, thanks for the call. 15 minutes before the hour. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Back with more of your calls, my thoughts, the news of the day, and the Talk Radio News Service is going to check in a little bit, too. Welcome back. Michael in Imperial Beach, California, watching on Free Speech TV on DirecTV. Hey, Michael, what's up?
Hey, Mr. Hartman. Okay, 25 seconds. My wildest theory ever about Christianity.
Okay.
Our last conversation was about the Immaculate Conception.
Right.
Now, we talked previously about how vain it is for humans to believe that we are the only life in the universe. Check this out. If alien abductions do happen, which I don't know if they do, but what if Mary was abducted, artificially inseminated, reintroduced into society, where every man knows that I've never had sex with that woman? Wouldn't that make her child different? What do you think, that Tom?
It might fly with the Scientologists, Michael. I don't know if it was people from the planet Theta or Xenu, rather, who came and did it. But, you know, the fact that she traveled to Bethlehem, to the hometown of her husband Joseph, or it says she was betrothed, but I don't think that you traveled with somebody that you're engaged to. I'm guessing that they were just simply married. I mean, Jesus had brothers and sisters. That's to the extent that Jesus's historical authenticity has been determined, and it's still in debate in many circles, but still. If he was authentic, then there's the evidence of his authenticity also has evidence of his having siblings. And,
isn't it wild, though, man? That book that has changed the world for either good or bad. It's just amazing how powerful that one book is, you know, and you're an author. You've written, what, 12 books, whatever?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
A little more than that, yeah. Yeah, it is. It is. And just the power of religion is pretty amazing. Michael, thank you for the call. Brian in Matthews, North Carolina. Hey, Brian, what's up? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
No problem, Professor. How are you today?
Good. What's up?
Well, first of all, I'll respond to that Alan guy who just called about that whatever message. They always look for gotcha questions. Get you on how many say this? Why do you all say that? This is a mindset. Has nothing about one paragraph or what message. Two, the Minor, Demetrius, whatever his name was.
Mm-hmm. Demetrius Minor.
Yeah. The big one-on-one, everyone knows, the minute you hit them with bullet points and they start chuckling and laughing, they're backpedaling. You've nailed them. And they can do about it.
Yeah.
Enough about him. There was one segment I was glad they concluded sooner.
Sure.
My call was about behavior in Christianity. I don't do the religion thing. I really don't. I grew up an altar boy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do the religion thing because over the years I've witnessed how we behave. What difference does it make if you're a Christian, Protestant, whatever, if you're behaving badly?
Right.
That's all I assess. When I look at a person, I don't see religion. I see behavior.
Yeah.
And that's what's more telling than anything. I don't, you know, Republican, Democrat, I don't care if you're a bad person. Pretty much you're a bad person. And I think, to me, I liken it to religion to a expensive suit. It doesn't matter if you look bad in it. What difference does it make?
Yeah. I think it's particularly offensive and destructive when religions that have at their core love and acceptance are used to justify death and destruction. And it's just, you know, whether it's George W. Bush declaring war on Iraq and then ending his speech with God Bless America, or, you know, whatever it may be, I just, it's over the top in my mind. Brian, thank you for the call. We'll be back. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service is going to drop in with us. Stick around. Minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service is on the line with us, brought to you by the story of Sholene and Kier, the slave from South Sudan. You can see it at thankless.com/watch. Victoria, welcome.
Hello, Tom.
Happy Monday. So what's going on in the world?
And to you.
Thank you.
The earthquake in Nepal, as the overall death toll has soared past 4,000 now, that's even without a full accounting from these vulnerable mountain villages that rescue workers are struggling to reach 2 days after the disaster, partly because they're cut off and also because they are so remote and they're expecting the numbers to go a lot higher. You know, roads have been blocked by landslides, things like that. People are asking about the U.S. response. I just came out of the White House briefing, which is currently going on. Now, over the weekend, the U.S. pledged $1 million in aid. Secretary of State John Kerry today pledged another $9 million in aid. So that's $10 million in aid so far. Also, a 128-person USAID disaster response team is either on the way or there with 45 tons of cargo. There's also a search and rescue team, at least one search and rescue team from Virginia, other things going as well. There were also military personnel already in Nepal from the U.S., and so they are helping as well with the rescue.
That's great, although a few million dollars is a drop in the bucket.
Well, it is a drop in the bucket, but it's $10 million. It's more than the $1 million over the weekend. It's been upped by $9 million, and so that's just since the weekend. So we'll see, you know, how that...
On the other hand, a little bit of money goes a long way in Nepal. I mean, it's a very poor country.
I would imagine.
Yeah.
Now, they are saying that they need a lot of help. They need food, they need shelter, they need water, they need helicopters. They're getting helicopters from India, not from anywhere else, although India is also reporting that it's had some of it. They've had to turn their planes around because Kathmandu's airport cannot handle the amount of flights that are coming in.
Oh, with relief supplies?
Right. So there's absolute chaos. So there's chaos at the same time. There's also reports now from survivors, there's some anger now at the slow pace of recovery, with government officials in real disarray, and aid workers struggling to move supplies out of Kathmandu's airport. So aid is not reaching people. Also, some aid workers are just going home to their families and are refusing to work. So you've got a lot of things going on, that because also they've had the monsoon is coming in May. They've had two nights of rain. They're very worried about disease. Government official has said they need at least 80 different types of medicines.
Wow.
And several types of doctors.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a major disaster.
Yeah. And I'm guessing that as they get into some of the more remote regions, you're going to see that death toll probably increase by an order of magnitude.
Well, they're hearing patchy reports of some villages being flattened and others being swallowed by landslides.
Wow. Wow.
But it's too early to say.
Yeah, not to mention the avalanches up on Everest.
Well, with the avalanche, the weather cleared today, so some helicopters were able to take off and get to the base camp at Mount Everest and start evacuating climbers.
Yeah. What else is going on in the world? I see you're in the basement of the White House.
Loretta Lynch was sworn in as U.S. Attorney General today, becoming the first African-American woman to fill the position.
Mm-hmm.
She ticked off some of her priorities as Attorney General, fighting crime, strengthening victims' rights, combating cyber attacks, and ending the modern slavery of sex trafficking.
Okay.
She said to not just represent the law and to enforce the law, but to use it to make real the promise of America, the promise of fairness, the promise of equality, of liberty and justice for all.
Did she say anything about going after banksters and big business?
Well, she ticked off those as her priorities.
Okay. Interesting. Well, we'll see. I mean, you know, a few months from now, we'll know how she does.
We'll
I wish her the very best.
Does.
I understand she's brilliant.
She is said to be brilliant. Yes, she's widely admired, and she's done a number of high-profile prosecutions. I don't know whether she's gone after any of the bankers during her time.
Yeah,
in
I think
New
that's
York.
Been the hit on her is that she was in a position to go after the banksters and
did not.
Right.
Yes, she was sworn in, of course, at the same time as the funeral of 25-year-old Freddie Gray was about to take place in Baltimore. This is the black man who died in police custody some days ago after something mysterious happened that caused a major spinal injury.
Mm-hmm.
And so questions were raised in the briefing room today about whether she should be making these deaths of black men at the hands of police her number one priority.
And she said...
Well, Josh Earnest, it was raised in the briefing with Josh Earnest. Josh
oh,
Earnest refused to say that it should be a number one priority, but said that it certainly would be a priority, but said ultimately this is something that needs to be addressed on the local level.
Yeah, I agree. I just think this has been going on forever, and it's just, you know, in the last, literally the last couple of years, the price of phones that have a camera built into them has dropped to the point where people in poor communities can afford to have them. And they're taking movies.
That's interesting.
And we're discovering for the first time what they've known for centuries.
That's very interesting.
My theory. Anyway, back to you.
The Supreme Court said today it's going to decide whether websites and other firms that collect personal data can be sued for publishing inaccurate information, even if the mistakes do not cause any actual harm.
Hmm.
Now, the justices are going to hear an appeal from Spokio.com, an internet search engine that compiles publicly available data on people and lets subscribers view the information, including address, age, marital status, and economic health. And a guy from Virginia sued them after viewing a profile on him that was totally wrong. And our federal court said, no, you got no right to sue, didn't have any harm. But then the Circuit Court of Appeals, the Ninth Circuit, said, yeah, it was enough that they violated the Fair Credit Reporting Act. Well, Google, Facebook, and other internet companies are watching very carefully, thinking it could expose them to billions of dollars in damages.
Whoa. I doubt they're going to let that happen. But we'll see. We'll see. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, brought to you by Thankless.com/watch. The story of Sholene and Kier. Thank you, Victoria. Great to see you.
Thank you.
Have a great day. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and I am so pleased and honored to have in the studio with me Michelangelo Signorelli, the host of the Michelangelo Signorelli Show. Am I saying your last name right?
That's right. You've got
okay.
it.
Weekdays live from 3 to 6, right on Sirius XM Progress 127, which is we're on the air there right now.
I come right after you.
Yep, indeed. Yeah, indeed. And how cool is that?
That's great.
He's also editor-at-large of the Huffington Post gay section.
Gay Voices, yeah.
Gay Voices, thank you. And author of the new book, It's Not Over, Getting Beyond Tolerance, Defeating Homophobia, and Winning True Equality. And Michelangelo, welcome. Great
thank
to have you in
so
the studio.
Thank you. So great to be in the studio. I've been on the show.
Yeah, we've talked on the air
phone.
Before.
Yeah.
Yeah. So... It's not over. I mean, we were talking before we came on the air, and I was saying that I think that in some ways, the gay rights movement, the civil rights movement for gay, lesbian, trans, et cetera, that actually may have an advantage over the civil rights movement for people of color, in that so many people are coming out now, and they're coming out in everybody's family. I mean, Dick Cheney's daughter.
Dick Cheney has one.
Yeah. Where are we on that scale of waking up and accepting?
Every group has its advantages and disadvantages. An advantage of the gay rights movement is, as you said, it happens in every family. Women's movement, women are the majority, right? But then there's a downside, right? Well, the downside with the gay movement on that is you're not raised by your own kind. So nobody's passing down the history. Nobody's passing down the ability to... learn how to fight back and not to become apathetic. Nobody's passing down the stories of what happened before.
So the gay community needs mentors.
That's right.
Lacking parents.
That's right. And what I talk about in It's Not Over is there's a sense of victory, of finality with marriage equality across the land and perhaps what the Supreme Court will do in June. And I start seeing the word inevitable out there. You know, it's inevitable we'll get full civil rights. You know, there's no federal bill. We're not in the 1964 Civil Rights Act. 29 states, you can be thrown out of a business, a restaurant, out of your job.
Just for being gay.
Perfectly legal. And when I start seeing the words inevitable and magnanimous, we have to now be magnanimous and gracious in our wins. You see people pulling back. It's a different strategy. It's not that challenging in that confrontational way that always wins the day. And, you know, I say, look at the women's movement. Look at African-Americans. You see the rollback. We need to be able to, you know, see that could happen here.
Yeah, and things go in fits and starts.
Yeah. There's so much more work to do.
Yeah, I mean, look at what happened at the, you know, when they took down Reconstruction in the 1870s. I mean, it was just basically flipping them back, you know, flipping the... So that being the case... What is the appropriate strategy, not only for people within the gay rights movement and people who are gay, but also for those of us who are not gay and want to support folks who are?
Well, I talk a lot about how we have to demand full civil rights and stop this sort of what I call the incrementalism approach. You know, the way that some of the gay leaders in Washington, the Beltway lobbying groups, have approached it was, let's ask for a little bit, a narrow employment bill with religious exemptions in it,
right,
which exempts the very people who will discriminate. And they haven't been able to get that done in 20 years. When you're not asking for your full civil rights, you're not really taken very seriously. We should be demanding all of it, and I think all of our allies should be, too. We should get away from this sort of ask for a little bit and you know, compromising with yourself before you even start. I think we've seen how that hadn't worked for Obama,
yeah.
Right? We also need to stop what I refer to as covering. Kenji Yoshino wrote a great book called Covering in 2006 about how a lot of groups, women, racial minorities, others, after they attain certain rights, they try to fit in and be team players and not rock the boat. And that's kind of a trap that allows the backlash to build. You need to continue to challenge people and show your diversity and your difference and not present gay people as palatable. You know, I talk a lot about pop culture and how pop culture, you know, often television shows gays in a way that's more palatable to straights. You know, they don't have sex. They're harmless. They're the nice neighbor next door. We need to really show the full diversity.
Yeah, as human beings, full members of the human family. How do you deal with and or respond to, and how do you recommend others deal with and respond to, religious fundamentalists who say whatever they say? I mean, you know, there's a spectrum from, oh, my God, it's evil, it's blasphemous, it's abomination, to, yeah, okay, that's fine, just, you know, let's not talk about marriage or something like that. I mean, and they all, quote, cite the Bible. And I'm not even just Christianity. I mean, you find this in Judaism, you find it in Islam, you find it in, assuming Buddhism and Hinduism. I'm guessing that homophobia is relatively universal in modern society anyway. How do we react to that? How do we respond to that?
I think we have to continually make the case and reiterate to the American people that separation of church and state. I go to the Conservative Political Action Conference. I go to the Values Voters Summit. In researching this book, I went to those events to see how the right organizes the Christian right. And I saw all of this religious liberties rhetoric and the religious liberties bills, quote unquote,
right,
being developed as a strategy to blunt gay rights once gay marriage came. Everything that happened with Indiana and my book coming out, you know, right at that moment seemed like, wow, what great luck. But I really had been seeing it developing at these forums. They are always looking for ways to inject religion back into the law.
Law.
Yeah, and always looking for ways to make themselves the victim. So now they are the victims of this horrible gay rights movement that is taking over. We need to just cut through that. And a lot of it is, you know, the way the media kind of falls for it, too. They should be putting religious liberties in quotes every time they talk about it, right?
Right. Well, and I think that, you know, there's something parallel to or whatever with the climate change movement. I mean, a lot of scientists and now even news agencies, you know, the Los Angeles Times most famously, are just saying climate denial is nonsense. We're not going to go along with it. It's wrong. It's, you know, it's we're just not going to get, and with regard to gay rights, climate denier has become a pejorative. I think that the word bigot is like a word that we need to, you know, put in 70-point type and surround with blinking lights. I mean, that's what's going on here. We're talking about bigotry.
Right. I have a whole chapter in the book called Abandoning the Media's, quote-unquote, both sides delusion, this idea that you have both sides on all the time. And they don't even tell the history of the other side when they come on. They don't talk about how they've put out lies and deception and defamation and again, not science. It's all religion on sexual orientation. One encouraging thing was the other day, Bob Schieffer on CBS had Tony Perkins from the Family Research Council on, and he actually introduced him as the leader of a group that has been labeled a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center. And I thought, wow, that's really a change, because when they're putting out defamation, these people should not be given legitimacy.
Right. I absolutely agree. And so what are the next steps?
Well, we have obviously enormous victories that have come to pass on marriage equality. We may see a big victory in June, but that's really the beginning. And I think
we need a federal civil rights law.
And that really means heterosexuals having to engage. It's not just, okay, let the gays get married. That's going to be the tough slog, particularly in the South. Business owners who are already saying, we don't want to bake a cake for a gay wedding, or we don't want to hire people who are gay. That's going to really require that breaking through that deep-seated bigotry that we've seen in this country on many issues.
Yeah. And, you know, as with the civil rights movement, we broke through that bigotry by law, you know, de jure. But de facto, not so much.
Right.
I mean, you know, we're still bouncing around. And it's going to be the same way with the gay rights movement. Michelangelo Signorelli, he is the author of It's Not Over, brand new book just out. Check it out. Michelangelo, great
to
see you.
So great to be in the studio. Thanks.
Thank you for dropping by. I wish you the very best.
Thank you.
And is there a website?
It'snotoverthebook.com.
Okay, great. And also, of course, you can hear Michael on Sirius XM Progress 127 right after this show. Thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be right back with your calls, my thoughts, the news of the day. Stick around. Welcome back. 15 minutes past the hour. And Edmund in Hot Springs National Park, Arkansas, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Network. Hey, Edmund, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm well.
I'm trying to talk about religion. I'm an atheist, yet I strongly believe that religion is a double-edged sword. If interpreted correctly, the core message can be very useful. However, one of the common side effects of religion, and it persists, and one of the most persistent side effects, is fanatism, which not only it impairs our judgment, but it always perpetuates ignorance and intolerance.
Yeah. So your argument is that it's not religion that it's that is the problem; it's fanatics using religion that's the problem.
It's a wrong interpretation of religion. The core message of all religions, as you said yourself, is be a good person, help others, don't do wrong to others, assist right. others. It's a very noble message.
Yeah.
However, if you see what's happening with ISIS, when people, or for same reason, the fanatic Christians or any other religion, when it's not interpreted correctly, and then it becomes a very dangerous sword.
Mm. Yeah. Excellent point. Excellent point, Evan. Thank you for the call and for watching Free Speech TV. Tony, watching Free Speech TV in Albury, California. Hey, Tony, what's on your mind today?
Tom, good morning. Can you hear me?
I hear you just fine.
Terrific. Thank you for running the show. Say, there's been so much on this show to address, and I'd love to address it all. But couple things I was thinking of is the flag waving and the all this stuff that the GOP has been doing for the last 30, 40 years is all replicated of Nazi Germany. And how Hitler rose to power, and if I've been reading a lot about the Koch brothers and how they actually have all this data coming in about how to portray them, how to portray the candidates, how much and all of the control that these people have over our government, which is really our only source of help at this point, And I really applaud you for getting this going, but I also want to talk to you mentioned Senator Warren and Al Franken and a number of these other guys, Bernie Sanders, that are fighting to keep our democracy a democracy. And the interesting thing about this religious thing is one of the things I was going to say is they need somebody to hate.
Yeah.
In Germany, it was many people, but Jews, communists, Catholics, it's the same thing here. They have to have somebody to hate to get people who really are about as thick as a dime to follow them and to blame them for the problems that they're having.
Yeah, yeah. I don't disagree. Thank you very much for the call, Tony. Great to hear from you. And thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. It's 20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Thomas Jefferson, 1826, a letter to Will Giles. He said, "Now look to a simple and splendid government of an aristocracy founded on banking institutions and moneyed incorporations under the guise and cloak of their favorite branches of manufactures, commerce, and navigation, riding and ruling over the plundered plowmen and beggared yeomen." In other words, the farmers and the workers. "This will be to them the next best blessing to the monarchy of their first aim and perhaps the surest stepping stone to it." Right, this is the billionaires, basically. I mean, Jefferson, he wrote, this is in an 1816 letter to Samuel Kercheval, "Those seeking profits were they given total freedom would not be the ones to trust to keep government pure and our rights secure. Indeed, it has always been those seeking wealth who are the source of corruption in government. No other depositories of power have ever yet been found which did not end in converting to their own profit the earnings of those committed to their charge. I am not among those who fear the people. They, and not the rich, are our dependents for continued freedom. We must make our election between economy and liberty, or profusion and servitude. Otherwise, as the people of England are, our people, like them, must come to labor 16 hours in the 24, and the 16th being insufficient to afford us bread, we must live as they do now," he's talking about the British, "on oatmeal and potatoes, have no time to think, no means of calling the mismanagers to account, but be glad to obtain subsistence by hiring ourselves to rivet their chains on the necks of our fellow sufferers." Astonishing. So what do we do about this? Well, Jefferson had a suggestion. He actually wrote two different letters to James Madison about this. In one, in 1785, he wrote, "Another means of silently lessening the inequality of property is to exempt all from taxation below a certain point and to tax the higher portions of property in geometrical progression as they rise." So as the value of your property goes up in a linear fashion, it goes from from being worth $100,000 to being worth $200,000. Okay, it's a 100% increase. Then the taxes would not just double; the taxes would go up tenfold. That's in 1874, earlier letter to James Madison, he says taxes should be proportioned to what may be annually spared by the individual, and in other words, he's arguing in favor of progressive taxation. I don't know if you saw this, Bobby Jindal writing this op-ed in the New York Times over the weekend. I believe it was April 23rd. What's today? The 27th. Yeah, so it was last Thursday or Friday, whatever it was. He says, "If we as conservatives are to succeed in advancing the cause of freedom and free enterprise," and basically what he's talking about here is the right of businesses to discriminate against gay people. The headline of the article, the title of the article is "Bobby Jindal, I'm Holding Firm Against Gay Marriage." Okay, so that's what he's talking about. And he says, "If we as conservatives are to succeed in advancing the cause of freedom and free enterprise, the business community must stand shoulder to shoulder with those fighting for religious liberty." And this is what I've been telling you for 2.5 hours now. This is where it all began. In the 1940s and 50s, starting with this meeting in 1940 with the National Association of Manufacturers, where this minister, James Fifield Jr., made a sales pitch, basically, saying that the New Deal was an encroachment upon businesses' freedoms and that these titans of industry says, we've got to be the source or we've got to enlist aid in being the source of information for people about how wonderful business is. So what's the best aid we can get? Come to us Christian ministers. It was basically a sales pitch for the business money. And he got it. In fact, this Christian libertarianism, one of the things that Kevin Cruz writes about is that after his speech, there was, what do they say, that you could hear the applause. Yeah, here it is. When we were finished, a journalist wrote, rumors report that the NAM, National Association of Manufacturers, applause could be heard in Hoboken. Right? The business people loved this idea. Hey, you know, let's start tossing some money at the churches, and in exchange for that, the ministers will start preaching that business is good. Business is a force for good. Forget what Jesus said about giving away everything and talking to the rich businessman and saying, sorry, you're not going to make it in heaven. Ignore that. Let's go back to neo-Calvinism, or let's invent neo-Calvinism, which is basically what's been going on since 1950. That the rich guys have hired shills to bring in the suckers, and one of the categories of shills are these, quote, fundamentalist preachers. And by the way, this is not unique to Christianity. You've got, in the Middle East, you've got the same thing happening in Islam. You've got the same thing happening in Judaism. You've got the same thing happening all over the world. Religion being exploited by A, extremists, and B, people who want to get rich, basically. Warlords, it's in Afghanistan, it's warlords. Here, it's GM. And General Motors, by the way, was at that meeting in 1940 where Fifield pitched this idea. And so it gets particularly not just toxic, but even dangerous when you have the interests of big business and the interests of fundamental religion, fundamentalist religion, combining forces to help promote each other. It's a cross-promotion scheme. And on top of that, the religious folks have tax immunity, right? They're 501c3s. They can claim, not just claim. They don't have to pay taxes. They don't have to pay property taxes. They don't have to pay sales taxes. They don't have to pay income taxes. They can amass mind-boggling amounts of money. Pat Robertson has amassed over $1 billion. Tax-free. I mean, you think L. Ron Hubbard had a racket going. It's all over the place. We'll be right back. It's 28 minutes past.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
We need to awaken America to its secular past, to its enlightened past. Well, I didn't start out saying, gee, let's make this religion day. But it's kind of turned into it. There's a lot of other stuff going on. And Martin O'Malley, by the way, who President Obama told a joke about last night. It was sort of funny, I suppose. He said Hillary Clinton was not recognized in a Chipotle. And Martin O'Malley was not recognized at a Martin O'Malley rally. Now, the fact of the matter is most people don't know who Martin O'Malley is. He was the former governor, and before that, I believe, a congressman for Maryland. And he's a progressive. And he now has come out with endorsed the Schatz-Schumer-Warren resolution and for debt-free college. And so, in fact, the headline, this from the PCCC, Martin O'Malley endorses debt-free college and Washington Post op-ed and national email to supporters. He's joining Senators Brian Schatz, Chuck Schumer, Elizabeth Warren, and 30 others in Congress who embraced debt-free college this week. Debt-free college is a big deal. But let me just very quickly, and then I'm going to pick up your phone calls here, go through a list of things that more than 70% of Americans support that you will not find on the agenda of the United States legislature, of the House or the Senate, because Republicans control them both, and Republicans don't like these things. But every single one of these things have more than 70% support across the political spectrum in the United States. Number one, letting the government negotiate drug prices for Medicare Part D. That is 79% support for that. Number two, giving students the same low interest rates as banks. 78% of people support that. That would be like less than 1% interest rate. The banks pay, like 0.3% interest rate. And then they loan the money to you on your credit card for 29%. Okay. 77% of people, universal pre-K, which also, serves as daycare for working parents. 75% of Americans want fair trade that protects American workers, the environment, and our jobs, which, by the way, is not the TPP. 74% end the tax loopholes for corporations that ship jobs overseas. Do you hear anybody in Congress talking about this? Three-quarters of Americans want this. But, hey, shipping jobs overseas, it's profitable to the donor class so that, you know, the shill class, the politicians, particularly the Republican politicians, they got to figure out other ways to bring the suckers in. End gerrymandering, 73% of Americans. Let homeowners pay down their mortgage with their 401k. I know that sounds almost brutal to me, but still 72% of Americans support it. In other words, no penalty if you take money out of your 401k and pay down your mortgage. 71% Medicare buy-in for all. In other words, a public option. 71%. Joe, the former congressman from Connecticut, blew this thing up. You're having a brain fart too, Shane. How quickly we forget. Yeah, Joe Lieberman, there you go. 71%. Medicare buy-in for all. Disclose corporate spending on political lobbying. 71%. This is the Disclose Act that the Republicans filibustered in the Senate. 71% of Americans want this. 71% of Americans want the NSA to get a warrant before they gather your metadata or listen to your phone calls. 71% of Americans think that we should be spending at least $400 billion a year on infrastructure to create jobs. 71% of Americans think the debt-free college at all public universities should be. 70% of Americans think we should expand Social Security benefits. 70% feel that we should have a full employment act, basically. It says that if capitalism fails, if you can't find a job in the private sector, then the public sector will create a job for you. 70% of Americans want a Green New Deal, millions of new clean energy jobs. 70% of Americans want to close the offshore tax loopholes. And that, you know, I mean, it goes on and on, but it's like, this is the problem that we have in America today, is that what Americans want to have happen is not happening because the Supreme Court has changed the nature of our political system from a constitutionally limited representative democratic republic to a plutocratic oligarchy, basically, run by kleptocrats. Anyhow, end of rant. Michael in Silver Spring, Maryland. Hey, Michael, what's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing?
Great. What's up?
Can I comment on both your guests' topic?
Feel free. Yeah, we've yeah.
Okay. The latter one first, Michael. The Civil War has a lot of symbolism in it. Okay, because both sides had white males on the front lines. And the difference between the LGBT movement to the women's movement and the blacks and Latinos minority civil rights movement is that the LGBT basically has white males running the movement.
By and large.
White males don't take doo-doo off of anybody, gay or straight.
Yeah.
Okay, so you can't tell a white male gay, no, and you can't tell a white male straight, no. That doesn't comprehend in their whole mentality. But the women's movement has no white males on the front line, and the blacks and the Latinos and minorities don't have white males on the front line. Okay? And that's the difference why this LGBT movement has been moving real fast.
I think, Michael, that there's a lot of truth to what you're saying. I think, though, that there's you can expand that, too. It's increasingly, as gay people are feeling safe to come out of the closet, people who 40 years ago or maybe even 15 years ago never would have acknowledged that they were gay, even to their families, are now saying it. And pretty much, I don't know if every family in America, but probably half the families in America are discovering that they've got gay members of their families. You can't say that for minority. Now, you can't say that for women, You know, I mean, women are more than half the population, 51% of the American population. But you know, you with the exception of interracial marriage, which is growing, but it's growing slowly. I mean, it's up from, I think, from around, what it was, 4 or 5% to around 9 or 10%, the last time I saw any statistics on that, you know, over the last 20, 30 years. But a lot of families have, you know, no contact with people of color, for example.
Exactly. And on the first one, the guest with the Christianity thing,
what it
comes down to, you brought up some good points. But what it comes down to is it's Moses the conservative versus Jesus the liberal.
Bingo.
Now, at every turn, the Sadducees and the Pharisees were challenging Jesus. They were the keepers of Moses' law.
Right.
And to stay on that law pattern, that's the conservative. And Jesus was, in every turn, they were attacking him and like working on the Sabbath, feeding the poor, you know, stoning the adulterer or whoever is a sinner. You know, he was the liberal on the liberal side, where it was some leniency in the law. And just like in America today, if you show any leniency, I think that's a word, on the law, okay, you're told that you're weak on crime. And, you know, and if you have any adjustment on sentencing, you know, the mandatory, you're weak on crime. So you're actually, whenever somebody calls in and on this religious tip, you know, I know there was a reform within the Judaism, but those Orthodox that try to maintain Moses' law, you should ask them, are you Orthodox Jew or are you a Christian? Because you got to make up your mind. If you're going to keep referring to the Old Testament, you're not a Christian.
Yeah, in my opinion, I don't disagree with you, Michael. It's you're stating it in a little more black and white terms than I would, but I would say that, you know, this is the challenge for modern day Christians. Are you going to hold to the Old Testament? Is that going to be your lodestar? And for a lot of these fundamentalists, it is. I mean, this arguably sociopathic Bronze Age God who liked to kill people who didn't agree with him, and aborted babies, and I mean, there's all kinds of horrible things that God does in the Old Testament. Or are you going to be, assuming somebody's in the context of Christianity, or are you going to be associated with this guy who said, you know, the first law is to love your neighbor as yourself? Or love God and then love your neighbor as yourself. I mean, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you get to... It's incredible when, you know, when I talk to my Christian family, what I can't stand is a pick and choose Christian that's going to run back to the law and start picking in there. Because most Christians, if you talk to most Muslims and Jews, they say that Christians don't know their Bible. So they don't know the law. Most Christians haven't even read the law.
Yeah.
And then they want to pick and choose going through it. So if you want to use the law, are you practicing Judaism or even Islam? Are you practicing the law, or are you in Jesus' camp, who was lenient on the law?
Yeah, interesting. Michael, thank you for the call. 15 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Back with your calls right after this. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And hang on just a second here. Got to get back over there. Okay. Kenyatta, watching Free Speech TV in Redlands, California. Oh, Freddie Gray's funeral is today. You're right. We should have been talking about that, too. What's up, Kenyatta?
Well, I wanted to tell you, Tom, that in the final analysis I've been watching for the last week, just totally astounded at this dust cloud that the Baltimore Police Department has put up regarding this man's death. So let me tell you, as you probably are aware, I've had police training, and for a brief period of time worked in that business. And I can tell you that recently, in the last 15 or 20 years, there's been a tactic devised called twisting up a suspect. And what it is basically You'll have officers take the suspect normally on the ground by the torso and twist the torso one way and twist the legs another way and apply pressure to various parts of the anatomy. If this is done haphazardly, it will result in the types of injuries that Mr. Gray suffered. Mm. My point is this. When this is over with, we're going to find out, and I can guarantee you this one, that man's injuries occurred prior to his entering the police transport van. This whole specious argument about a rough ride is exactly that.
Right.
That's exactly what it is. And I'll tell you, there's a less lethal form of this tactic called chicken winging, where a suspect's arms will be placed behind the back as if you were going to apply handcuffs, but and then sometimes the suspect is handcuffed, sometimes not, and then the fists are raised above the shoulders, and I've actually heard guys' arms snap.
Wow.
From that.
Ouch. Ouch, 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 ouch.
And let me just say this too, Tom. The reason for the, by the way, this tactic of twisting up a suspect is because it leaves no bruises.
And that was the thing about Freddie Gray's body was that it didn't, you know, it wasn't badly bruised, if my recollection is correct.
Right. I did just so you'll know, at TomHartman.com on the forum, I did a piece on this if anybody's interested in learning.
Oh, cool. I'll have to track it down. Kenyatta, thanks a lot.
Gray, the human pretzel. Okay.
Yeah, thanks a lot for sharing that with us. I appreciate it. I appreciate you sharing your experience. Thank you. Alan in Gainesville, Georgia, watching Free Speech TV on Dish. Hey, Alan, what's up?
Hey, let's get back to religion.
Okay, we got a minute to the break. It's yours.
Okay, 1 minute. I don't think it's the, let's say, I think it's more the love of religion rather than the root, than money being the root of all evil. How do we really know if God exists? I mean, it's beyond us, Tom. And these people, especially down here, these religious people, they use religion as their backup, as their prop to fulminate hatred. That's the thing that's very, 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 very scary living here in the South. There's bigotry, racial bigotry. There's political bigotry. They hate Barack Obama because he's a black man. That's the bottom line. And I think the only thing we in this day and age can be is an agnostic. We don't know. Otherwise, even the atheists, how the heck do they know?
Right.
There is no God.
Well, that's my old argument, that atheism is a religion, too. Agnosticism is not. Alan, thank you for your call. I'm with you. We'll be back. Ten minutes before the hour, welcome back. You know the story of that woman, that was a week or two ago, who showed up at her son's sex ed class in Michigan and live-tweeted the thing and how they were talking about they were basically just lying to the kids, you know, this abstinence-only sex education. On the TV, you know, we simulcast this radio show also as television on Free Speech TV, and the shot that we use as an interstitial, as a, you know, going in and out of things, is a live picture of the Capitol building. And it's all covered with scaffolding, and they're putting fabric around the scaffolding now. And it sort of looks like a giant condom on top of the Capitol building. And it's like, okay, the Republicans come to town, they take over Congress, and now we've got to put a giant condom. I don't know. It was just one of those weird thoughts. Anyhow, Charles in Opa-locka, Florida. Hey, Charles, rescue me from my terrible joke.
Okay. Good afternoon, Tom.
Hey, what's up?
I wanted to talk about what we've been saying earlier, how, you know, about education,
mm-hmm.
as far as free colleges.
Right.
And I just think, you know, this is a Christian nation.
No, it's not. We're not a Christian nation. We're a nation full of Christians.
I'm sorry. We're a nation full of Christians. Well, this is direct. Really, I'm directing this to the right wing.
Okay.
You know, slavery was so bad, and seeing that we have so many low-information voters out there, why, you know, it's something good that they would do. Why can't we give free college to, you know, minorities, and let's just chalk it up you know, as right. something Christians would do.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I think one thing that scares the right wing is when they hear reparations.
Right.
And for my people, I just think that should be good enough. That's all the reparations that we need.
Yeah. I would add to college trade schools as well, because not everybody is
exactly
suited for college. But and then if you want your trade schools to really be successful and you know, there to be jobs for people to get out of them, we need to change our trade policies and bring our manufacturing jobs back home, which going to be a tough job.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
The next time you have someone on like Mr. Miner that you had on earlier,
yeah.
Why don't you ask them, you know, what do they think about reparations for blacks or any minority, even women? I mean, you know, whoever's in that class, right. that they should get education.
Yeah.
You know, I think
that would
that's
be an interesting question, because Mr. Miner himself is African American, the conservative who was on in our first hour, no, in our second hour. I don't know his position on reparation, although being an assertive conservative, I'm guessing that he would freak out at the idea or the question. But, yeah, yeah.
Just, I got one last thing for you.
Go for it,
Charles. Last thing for you. As far as Freddie Gray is concerned, the way those guys, the police officers, pulled that man into the paddy wagon, not waiting on a rescue to come because he was actually hurt, I just think that's manslaughter. That is manslaughter.
Yeah.
Man, you cannot get away from that. That man was injured. You had to drag him in there. I mean, you know, as far as we can tell, they had to, you know, they have to be negligent, because that seems like if he was dying at that point, they did not render aid, which is also their job.
And I think in some states, isn't, Shane, you could tell me, isn't negligent manslaughter considered murder, actually? It would be manslaughter by omission? Because they have a duty to protect him under arrest. I see. Okay, so that has to do with the police. Cool. Thank you, Shano. Thank you, Charles. Good talking to you both. Joey in Springfield, Missouri. Hey, Joey, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, you know, it's the one thing I think about when you talk about Jefferson is that I think that Jefferson and you both are not Christians. You're Jesians.
That's I'll buy that.
You know, because you believe really in Jesus and the stuff that he says, but not all the rest of the stuff that's in the Bible. And, you know, one of the first questions I ask people is when they say, do you believe in God? I go, yeah, just not that one. If you were God, couldn't you come up with a better plan than that?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good,
you know, and normally, if you think about that question, you will come up with a better plan than that, and that'll tap you right into what's really real. Because, after all, if you can come up with a plan like that, then how good is your God if you can't come up with one better?
Yeah, very thought-provoking, Joey. Thank you very much for the call. Hey, fascinating. Steve in Sheldon, Washington, listening to KBCS. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Great to hear your voice in this red corner of our blue state here.
Thank you.
Hey, I read something the other day, and it gave me an aha moment I wanted to share with you, and I think why the Republicans are so much better at pulling people along than the Democrats. I read a book about the Great Mutiny in 1797 in England, and there was a line in that book, a quote, I'm going to paraphrase it, that revolutions happen when the grievances of the majority align with the political aspirations of an informed few, or something to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Republicans' tactic is always to come up with or point out the grievance. So gay rights, they don't talk about, you know, gay rights, they talk about they want to take away your religion or they want to limit your religion. And the Democrats, and I think the informed folks, especially folks like you, are always talking about principles. And I think for you and I and our people of our age, a great example was the anti-war movement. Once the draft went away, the anti-war movement went away, because most folks were motivated by the grievance for them personally than were motivated by the philosophical, you know, question.
Yeah, there's a small remnant of peaceniks, genuinely anti-war people, but they're mostly kind of like in the Quakers, you know.
Or those of us who have, you know, thought about the things back in the day and still have those same values.
Right.
It wasn't just about whether we're going to get drafted. And I think as a progressive, one of my most disappointing years was 92, because my generation was elected to office all over the place. And I didn't see things change the way I thought they were going to change. And I think what happens is the Republicans say they want to limit your religion. They don't want you to be able to practice your religion by discriminating. And I think the Democrats need to start coming up with the framework of how it's going to grieve you. And I think healthcare, they should have said, you know, Republicans like insurance companies to be able to take away your insurance.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Stephen. Steve, the Democrats have been very, very bad at playing offense, and they need to get better at it. And even defense, they often ignore. Steve, thanks for the call. But the Republicans are brilliant at it because they've got to be. I mean, you know, the Republican Party has evolved into being very competent at messaging because basically when your existence depends on a lie, you've got to be pretty good at your message. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.